Welcome to iPharmRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iPharmRx. Our subject today is the treatment of venous thromboembolism in patients with cancer. Deep vein thrombosis and pulmonary embolism are, unfortunately, an all-too-common complication associated with many types of cancer. The treatment of VTE in this population is particularly vexing due to the high risk of bleeding, potential drug-drug interactions, and diminished intake of food due to anorexia, nausea, or vomiting. And while warfarin is more convenient because it's an oral dosage form, it's difficult to manage in patients who are being actively treated for cancer. And the outcomes from clinical trials have shown that the low molecular weight heparins are a better choice. But what about the direct oral anticoagulants? The DOACs are not prone to as many drug-drug and food interactions as warfarin, and in terms of cost, they're less expensive than the low molecular weight heparins, and they work rapidly and produce predictable anticoagulation, so dose adjustments based on response are not necessary. Couldn't we just use one of these newer oral agents instead? Well, until recently, we simply haven't had the evidence to support their use. But in February 2018, the New England Journal of Medicine published a study which specifically examined the use of the direct oral anticoagulant edoxaban to treat venous thromboembolism in patients with cancer. And joining me today to talk about the results of this study are Dr. Elizabeth Shuffle, a PGY2 ambulatory care pharmacy practice resident at the University of Tennessee Health Science Center in Memphis, Tennessee, and her co-author and PGY2 residency program director, Krista George. They both wrote for iPharmRx a commentary entitled Stop the Shots, Edoxaban versus Dalteparin for Cancer-Associated VTE Treatment. Well, Liz, Krista, welcome to the iPharmRx podcast.
Thank you, Stuart, for having us.
I'm looking forward to the discussion, Stuart. Thanks for having us.
So, Krista, Liz, before we get started, I want to share with you a patient case. You're seeing HS, a 67-year-old Caucasian woman, at the anticoagulation clinic today for an initial visit. The patient was discharged from the hospital about 3 days ago on enoxaparin, 100 milligrams, sub-Q once daily for the treatment of venous thrombosis. She had a radical mastectomy 3 months ago and is now receiving chemotherapy for stage 4 breast cancer. She's been responding to treatment but has episodes of nausea and vomiting after each round of chemotherapy, and she's lost 12 pounds. Last week, she began to have some chest pain and shortness of breath. She was directed to the emergency department and subsequently admitted for evaluation and treatment of a suspected pulmonary embolism. The patient's feeling a bit better today after her hospital discharge. She still has some shortness of breath, but it's improving. She feels confident in her ability to give herself subcutaneous injections, but she's been getting some bruising around the injection sites. Patient currently weighs 140 pounds or 64 kilograms. And her BMI is 24.8. Her discharge labs indicate that she has slightly diminished renal function with a serum creatinine of 1.4 and an estimated GFR of 53 mils per minute. Her electrolytes and glucose are all within normal limits, and her platelet count was 138,000. So, before we talk about the results of the Hikusei VTE cancer study, I'm wondering what's going through your mind in a case like this. What additional information would you like to gather during this encounter? And what treatment changes, if any, you'd be considering at this point?
Okay, so definitely the first thing I would think about is just how overwhelming this all probably just seems. Things just happening back to back to back. So I'd want to kind of get a little bit of her background, especially in relation to any GI issues or history of any types of bleeding, as well as just verifying her injection technique, since she seems pretty confident, but I would want her to be extremely confident.
Stuart, other things I would think about would be evaluating the renal function in terms of, is it stable or is it changing? I'd like to know a little bit more about the severity of her post-chemo nausea and vomiting and her hydration status and how much that could be contributing to her diminished renal function. And I'd also be curious to know if there were any anti-10A levels being monitored inpatient due to her diminished renal function.
Great. So in the commentary you wrote for iFormerX, you described the methods and the result of the study titled Edoxaban for the Treatment of Cancer-Associated Venous Thromboembolism. And for those in our audience who haven't read the paper yet, can you give us a brief synopsis?
So this study looked to compare edoxaban, which is a once-daily oral medicine, to dalteparin, which is a once-daily injection for the treatment of cancer-related VTE. It followed those patients that were included and looked at a non-inferiority when it comes to recurrent VTE as well as major bleeding over a 12-month period. And though not all patients completed the full duration, the results were very promising. So the primary endpoint was seen in 12.8% of edoxaban patients versus 13.5% in the dalteparin population. This resulted in a hazard ratio of 0.97 and a p-value of 0.006 for non-inferiority. And though recurrent VTE was seen less in the edoxaban group, this was countered by the increase in major bleeding episodes in the edoxaban group.
So tell us a little bit more about what you believe to be some of the key strengths and limitations of this study. Are there any major sources of bias, potential confounders, or other threats to the internal validity of the study?
I think the greatest strength of this study is that the intervention performed on par with standard therapy in uncharted territory. Another positive would be the investigation number. So the N was well over 1,000, and they included a variety of different patients with different types of cancer diagnoses. So this could be applied to a lot of different patients. In terms of negative or detractors, the length of therapy was definitely different between the two groups. So on average, in the dalteparin group, they had received therapy for 184 days versus in the edoxaban group, this was 211. So that's almost a month's worth of difference. And this potentially could have impacted the rate of major bleeding, which was higher in edoxaban since the exposure to drug therapy was a little bit longer. And additionally, an issue when it comes to bleeding for patients is the thought of reversal agents. So it's a lot easier to treat major bleed in, let's say, a patient who's on dalteparin, or in this case, enoxaparin, versus any of the DOACs. Granted, the recent approval of a 10A reversal agent in earlier May 2018, this risk might be mitigated a bit.
I think another thing that we have to keep in mind that could have affected the increased rate of major bleeding is the higher rate of GI bleeds in the edoxaban group, which could have been due to the fact that there were more patients in the edoxaban group with a history of GI-related cancer. And so that could be contributing to the higher risk of major bleeds in the edoxaban group.
So, Krista, Liz, I'm wondering if you think this study is a game changer. Should we be considering edoxaban and perhaps other DOACs as the drugs of choice for the treatment of VTE in patients with cancer? Are there specific patients we shouldn't be using a DOAC? And what about HS? Would you consider using a DOAC in her case? And if so, which DOAC would you prefer?
I definitely believe that this is a game changer when it comes to treatment of cancer-related VTE, specifically for edoxaban. So in terms of trying to apply this to other DOACs, there are some investigational studies out there right now. One is called the Caravaggio study, which looks at apixaban, and then the SELECT-D looks at rivaroxaban. So potentially there might be even more data out there to support more types of DOACs. In terms of what patients wouldn't be a good candidate for oral therapy would definitely be those with any type of history of GI bleed or just increased risk of having a gastrointestinal bleed, or those with unstable renal function would definitely not be candidates. But I think overall, I would definitely have a discussion with HS to see if she would be willing to try edoxaban.
Stuart, I agree completely with Liz. I think if we knew a little more about HS's renal function and how stable it was, I think it would be worth having a conversation with her about using a DOAC simply from a quality of life standpoint. And also, we'd have to confirm that she has no significant GI risk for bleeding. But I do think this gives us an option for our cancer patients with VTE.
Well, Liz, Krista, I want to thank you both for joining me today to discuss the use of DOACs to treat venous thromboembolism in patients with cancer. And I think it's clear from your comments that you believe this trial really does provide us some strong evidence that DOACs can be used in patients with VTE associated with cancer, and that it's a viable option, particularly in those who have adequate renal function and those who do not have a history of either GI cancer or GI bleeds. Well, tell us what you think. Should DOACs be the preferred choice in VTE treatment in patients with cancer? Only iForumRx members can leave comments and use the interactive features on the site. You can become a member of iForumRx. It's free, so sign up today. And check out our growing list of resource pages, which include links to many of the key clinical trials, practice guidelines, and much more. Until next time, this is Stuart Haynes, editor-in-chief of iForumRx, signing off.